We've welcome back, Motown Fisher. I want to start with the with football and, you know, the 2-point converts in the conference is now, you know, the CFL season's almost over. And in the CFL this year, they've went for a 2-point convert 72 times and they've connected on 48 of them, which is 67% basically. Meanwhile, in the NFL, they're 18 of 41 early on in the season at 43.9%. The CFL, that's pretty high ratio, and then considering that converts are down to 86%, there's a lot of arguments why coaches should lean towards a 2-point convert more often than not.
And that's what we've been hearing, especially even recently. They've been criticizing some coaches. I mean, Mike Tomlin has been going for it more, and on the other end, Belichick, they criticized last week for when he went up 13 late that they didn't go, that he didn't try a 2-point convert late. Belichick, his view on it is early on, you should probably go for it a little bit more because you can always make up for it in the end. Of course, looking at these statistics, Jason, looking at the CFL, I mean, even look at how many missed converts right now. We're at 86.3% versus the NFL, which is 95.2%. We're kicking from basically the same spot. That doesn't really make a lot of sense in a lot of ways. BC's missed 8 this year. Winnipeg 6, Montreal 5, and Edmonton, Calgary have all missed 4. All of them under 83%.
Yeah, but it's funny about Edmonton. 3 of those came in the first 2 weeks of the season.
That's right.
With Grant Shaw, right? So they definitely.
Yeah, he's got 4. Yeah,
and he got better after that. It's funny. Even in the NFL, we're seeing theirs have dropped 4% from last year. And you know what? It's a longer kick. We saw the Tucker one in San Francisco where, you know, his foot almost disappeared in the turf. he was not happy about that. The 2-point convert, though, the CFL significantly more effective on it than the NFL teams.
You have to think it's the bigger end zones. You have to think just, you know, more passing, more opportunity. Just like in the red zone when we watch the NFL, anytime somebody gets in tight, you know, everything, you know, 1 yard off the ball in the CFL. I mean, they're at the 2-yard line, I guess, in the end. But I think it's the idea of the bigger end zone is to the advantage of the offense. You have to think that.
Looking at, we're seeing, I want to get your thoughts on it quickly because I think it's up to 16 or 17 lawsuits now. None of them are really significant against, the daily fantasies and FanDuel and such. Nevada may be flexing their muscles a little bit because they've pretty much dominated sports wagering for the last decade and decades and decades. And how much of that do you think is coming from them? And, more and more states coming on. Are they going to be able to stop it? Or is it just looking to regulate it?
Ultimately, this is going to become a matter of regulation. But then we have to look at the dominance that Vegas has had over the entire gaming industry. I mean, the fact that even when the IUEGA, the Unlawful Internet Gaming Act, came out after poker got popular years ago, sports betting, you know, the internet became popular, the interwebs, you know, the people were betting and they were having, you know, they were doing it offshore. All of a sudden, the U.S. basically flexed their muscle. And a lot of that comes from Nevada because Nevada picks up so much of that revenue. People go to Vegas, they enjoy their entertainment, you know, and the people, of course, that live in Nevada, they like to gamble. I mean, it's strange that nowhere else can you do this, but, out of all the states there, you know, there's only 3 of them that offer anything even close. Delaware offers a little parlay, and, of course, New Jersey is really pumping to get something there as well for Atlantic City. But, you know, Nevada dominates the market. They're flexing their muscle, and at the end, we're going to see if this will ultimately regulate the industry, take a bigger chunk of taxes for the entire country. And then, of course, what also happens in Canada? I mean, is this going to result in these guys allying with single bet wagering? You know, is this going to result in legislation changes? I mean, there's just too much money on the table. I mean, you know, not to get all political, but I mean, you know, same thing with Justin Trudeau, the legalizing marijuana. I mean, look what's happening in the States. There's money on the table. And if people can get through that, there's a lot of tax revenue going that can happen.
Interesting how one play can really alter everything for people watching the game and those who wager on the game. And, of course, I'm talking about in college football last week. Most people, I'm sure, have seen it by now. Michigan State down by 2. MSU decides to punt. Punter mishandles the snap. All of a sudden, they return it for a touchdown. And not only does it change the outcome of the game, but drastically change the outcomes of a lot of people's wagers.
Wow. I was reading that in the Sunset Station Sportsbook, there, the guy was actually left digging through the trash with 10 seconds left, you know, and I'm not going to lie, I've done that with my Sports Select tickets, et cetera. You know, nothing can happen. You throw it away. I never rip them, though. I will say this. I never rip my tickets unless it's official. But I will throw it in the garbage, and, you know, I've never really had to go back through it. However, this guy, apparently at the Sunset Station, he had a $30,000 money line bet on the Wolverines, and all of a sudden, and also with Michigan State, another guy had a $50 eight-team parlay, and they were racing into the garbages to pick that one up. It was a tough play. I mean, and sadly too, I don't know if you talked about it on the show, you know, the punter got threats and you know, there's crazy people
out
there.
Fans go a little bit
but what
nuts.
A play though. And just for the sake of sport, what a play. I mean, that was, most people obviously thought they were done.
Now, why'd they punt? That's what I still understand.
Well, that's a good question. A lot of people say, you know, you just should have let the defense go, let them throw a Hail Mary from their own 50 versus putting it deep. But really, if a punt can be blocked, to me, that is kind of the question. You can always try. I mean, obviously, they're trying to block the punt. That's the only play they had, or a punt return. But, I mean, they got what they wanted, mishandled punt, and they ran it back.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Oh, it was. That was one of the craziest finishes I've seen.
Especially in college football, where we know that every win is so impactful. Yeah. And if you're in, you know, the top 10, that's even more.
Yeah, it's definitely a huge turning point. Very good last week on the predictions on the show with Calgary and even Denver straight up. Of course, Miami, which was kind of an easy one. I think the easiest pick of the week.
The easy fish.
Yeah, hey, trust me, as a fish fan, I hadn't said it's easy, but that was an easy win over Tennessee to pick. But you look with Tennessee and Mariota out and Atlanta, I know they're on the road. That's got to be one of the easy picks this week, isn't it? What's the line at now? I haven't looked recently.
Actually, right now, I think... Atlanta's being backed by 72% of the public right now with 5.5. So right
they're
now
still only 5.5 favorites.
It's gonna clearly when it's in that direction, we're gonna wait to see what happens tomorrow, and we'll have the newsletter out tomorrow morning. And since the NFL started, we've had that newsletter first thing in the morning Saturday and first thing in the morning Sunday. So everybody gets. I always make a Sports Select play in there as well, but we get to analyze not just from today because Friday is still 48 hours away from. What everything that happens.
Sure.
So lots can happen between now and then. And at this point, it's 5.5. I mean, you can definitely see this going to 6.5 for Atlanta, especially, you know, the books don't want to have their entire week ride on Atlanta. I mean, they clearly want some money to offset all this. 72% of the betting is, again, on Atlanta. Last week was interesting because this is one of the highest I think I've seen, and I can't remember, which, you know, I don't officially track it, but 82% of bettors last week took the Pats at 10 points. We didn't in the newsletter. In fact, we actually put out Indy at 10 points, and we got it late in a backdoor cover, but that's the point. I don't know if you remember a few weeks ago when we were talking about Alabama was a favorite for 6 years in a row.
72 games.
But against the spread, they were only 34 and 33. I mean, all these spreads are huge. This is what happens in these games, especially with, I mean, I don't know how 10 points, I mean, obviously the Pats covered every game until that point. But in this case, when you have such a cushion, I mean, that's a huge, and in fact, this week, it's kind of gone the other way. The Jets are actually 10 point dogs right now. And
Joe just threw his hat on the floor. He hates when his team's favored that much.
favored? No, they're dogs this week.
The Jets are dogs?
Against
New
England.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay.
Against New England. So
10 point dogs?
They started at 10. Now we're seeing it about 9, 8.5. Mm. But there's lots of public backing on the Jets because right now the Jets have the best defense in the league. And then, of course, we've just watched the Pats go through what they just, you know, covering by 6. So this was one of those that everybody thinks is going to be closer than double digits. So there's a huge movement on the
Let's
Jets.
Let's ask the expert who watches the Jets closer. Will the Jets cover the spread, Mujo?
No.
No. You've seen Tom Brady shred them too often? Or is it more because the Jets just can't score any points?
Tom Brady is 20-6 all time against the New York Jets. That's not going to change this weekend.
But isn't the more important question here, will the Jets just bore them to sleep? Like, isn't that kind of... You know, isn't that part of this equation? They don't exactly play exciting football.
We had our NFL, one of our NFL guys, Ben Fisher, earlier, and he said kind of what I think a lot of Jets fans, a statement that they echo, that Ryan Fitzpatrick is due to remind us that he's Ryan Fitzpatrick. Could be this week. Could be next week against Oakland, the week after against Jacksonville. Ryan Fitzpatrick is still Ryan Fitzpatrick at the end of the day. I'm not optimistic about this.
Because even if the Pats score 21, do you think the Jets can score more than 10?
I think their defense can get them 10 points, but I don't think their offense still fits. It all comes down to Fitzy.
But remember, the backdoor cover, this is the classic idea. Late in the game, sure. They don't care being up two scores. They don't care. They will let you dink and dunk all the way to the end zone, and then you still have to recover an onside kick and then still do something. So that's why the spread, making calls with the spread is so difficult, particularly when they get to double digits. I mean, we've seen these 14-point Jacksonville underdog come in down 20 late in a game, and you know, yay, we scored. We lost by 14. All you've beat is the spread. We've seen this.
Who do you like this week? Who are some of the picks you like in the NFL?
Well, yesterday, actually, we ended up hitting the Seahawks last night as one of our top plays between our premium newsletter and the free newsletter that we sign up to here on the Jason Greger Show. But the one for my momentum play, which, by the way, yesterday we also hit the little two-teamer. We hit a two-teamer with the Rangers. And my buddy, Devin Dubnyk, well, not really my buddy, but they didn't score for 29 minutes in that game after 3-2, and we had the under 5.5. We combined them because the Rangers were such a heavy, heavy money line favorite. And we ended up winning by the seat of our pants. No empty net, no anything. 29 minutes of shutout hockey, which saved that. So we got a nice little plus 158 parlay there. But the one, though, I like for my momentum play, which I make in every single newsletter, I like Indy this week. We definitely like Indy.
Liking the Colts.
Right now, everybody's back on the Saints bandwagon. I don't know what it is about the Saints, Jason, but the Saints, I mean, should we say that every time they start marching, everybody is behind them. As soon as they show any signs of life, this is a team that everybody wants to back. And of course, Indy loses again. They haven't been playing well. I mean, they were in that game, you know, and they were taking a lot of
chance. What's the line in that game?
-4. -4 for Indy. So they got to win by more than a field goal here. So a couple of really good statistics that when you look at it in the macro being like years and years and years of database work, fade a road dog off of a win as a home dog against a team off a loss. And that, you know, it's a lot of pieces to that. But the idea here is, generally speaking, when you're a home dog, that means there's very little faith in the public. You're probably not playing very well. And take away the fact that they're the Saints. Just put random football team X. They're a home dog. It takes a lot to be a home dog. You're clearly not, you know, they're not a very good team. And this number, when they're a home dog fading a road dog off of a win, right now we're 84-37-1, 70% against the spread. And the Saints, keep in mind, are just 8-11 or 7-11-1 with Rob Ryan as defensive coordinator. I mean, not a big fan of Rob Ryan. And a team also, too, that has a losing record last season is just 98-150. In the last, we're doing about 15 years worth, off of a win as a home dog. So again, come back to, you're a team that hasn't had a lot of faith. The public doesn't have a lot of faith in you. The bookmakers don't have a lot of faith in you. But you find the way to win at home, and now you go on but you're a losing team. Now you go on the road after this sort of, you know, not miraculous but reasonably tough win, particularly against the Falcons, and you don't do very well. And this is one of those perfect spots. Breeze had a decent game last week, but nothing, you know, nothing can get over the fact that the Saints are bad. Their defense is really, really bad. 410 yards allowed per game. And the Jets, in comparison, allow 269, just for the record. You know, 400 yards a game. This has a potential to be a shootout. The other game we really like, particularly because, I mean, again, we've talked about how the public likes the betting, and we're not always going against the public, but this one we like. Castle starts, and this usually a new quarterback means some sort of inspiration, which you hope in that offense. The last six games and the last 12 of 13, this game the total is 44.5. The last 12 of 13 between the Giants and the Cowboys since 2009 have gone over. 12 out of 13. But the public is backing the under with 58% of the bets going, watching the Cowboys struggle offensively. So right now, no one thinks anybody can score. And new quarterback in place. Again, they tend to have a lot of the same people are in place, minus Tony Romo, of course. But with Castle there, you know, this could be definitely the start of, you know, it really, I think it's just another classic 27, 21, 31, 28 type of game. I think it's just going to be offense, offense. I mean, that's you know, that's our raw number.
You just look at Odell Beckham's numbers, and no one can really shut him down. The only ones who shut him down are when the Giants don't throw to him in the second half, and Sutton tells me that's not going to happen. So I would agree with you. I like that pick on the over. And just for fun, did you look up anything on the Oilers and the Capitals? Because for whatever reason, the Oilers have played well against the Capitals in Ovechkin's tenure. They're 5-4-1. And they really haven't, outside of the one game against Calgary, we haven't seen a big offensive explosion from the Oilers. Haven't seen a high-scoring game for both teams. And just on a gut, is there any number crunching that says my gut has anything to back that up? Or is it just wishful thinking on my part that there'll be offense tonight?
I personally, I think I've been on this show now for over a year, and I think we've had these conversations. I like pace. I really like watching pace and how it, you know, especially, particularly when you're trying to predict it. I think the Oilers are playing, especially recently in this winning streak, they've been playing with pace. And yes, of course, they've also been, you know, the puck hasn't been going in their own net as much, which is great. But I think this definitely has a 4-3 type game behind it. 4-2, 4-3. I would definitely lean on the over between two of these teams, and also too, you know, Washington might be a little bit tired, which says they might be less gritty, and the Oilers could, if the Oilers are playing with their pace that they seem to be playing with, they could score goals, and allowing a couple again, 4-3, 5-3 isn't out of the question in a game like this to me.